Welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. On this week's show, KVNF DJ Adam Gall speaks with American songwriter and producer Jeffrey Focolt. Jeffrey stopped by the KVNF studios on his way to his show in Ridgeway to play some music and chat with Adam. Here he is with a song.
Someone I know taught me without really teaching about this world now. It's not like it was then. It even rained more often. I remember the farm now, Mama's bright dress, and the look on your face when she left. Oh, how did we ever survive so much missing that never came back? It just stayed missing. I feel I'm growing radar, receiving messages from out in the plains of Kansas, of someone somewhere, someplace out there. That's as good as I felt lately. Lily, I love you. Don't know how I ever got by.
Jeffrey Focolt, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. Nice to be here.
Yeah. First, tell me about your guitar.
This is a Resophonic guitar. So before they had electric guitar and amplifiers, the loudest you could get was if you had a resonating cone in your guitar. This one has three cones that are built into the body of the guitar, and the body is made of steel. And those three cones, they resonate at different volumes at different frequencies. So a note that you play on the fretboard, you could play it, you know, with the about that hard, and it's going to resonate those three cones in one way, right? And you could play it harder, and you're going to hear these weird sympathetic resonances that come off the three cones. And then if you played that same note somewhere else on the body, it's going to treat the cones a little different. So it's kind of like having two or three guitars.
Yeah.
It's a weird sort of temperamental
It's a beautiful
instrument.
Sound.
It's made for slide guitar.
Yeah, with that slide, it's amazing.
Yeah, so this one's made, this is a Mule Resophonic guitar, and Mule is from Saginaw, Michigan, and they're made by a guy named Matt Ike, who's a good friend of mine. I have two of these guitars. One's a Resophonic steel body like this that, if you ever had the record Brothers in Arms by Dire Straits, it's like that kind of guitar. And then they also made me a steel body Telecaster that doesn't have a resonator, and it's just a straight up electric guitar with two pickups. So,
cool.
But they're cool. They're really beautiful instruments. And
are you just traveling with that one?
Yeah. So for years I've played, the last, you know, probably 5 years, I've played with an old Gibson acoustic guitar, and usually an electric guitar, either my Mule, what's called a Mule Caster, or an old Dan Electro from the late 50s. I just decided I wanted to go out on the road and have just one guitar,
keep
and sort of
simple.
Handcuff myself, so I had I had only one thing that I could do, or, you know, a variety of things, but they had to be on this one guitar. So.
Well, and Billy's just playing, he's got a pretty simple kit that he's operating with too, right?
Yeah, so I'm playing with a drummer, and his name's Billy Conway, and Billy was in a band called Morphine for years, and before that he was in a band, the band before Morphine, that had a bunch of the same guys. It was called Treat Her Right, and that was in the 80s. And so he had his fill of going out and playing full kit on a tour bus, and now when we go out, he plays a suitcase drum kit. So it's a big old traveling salesman suitcase, basically a square.
Yeah, I love the concept.
It's great. And then inside it fits a snare drum with a conga head made by Remo, and then what's called a sock cymbal, which is or a lowboy, which was before the hi hat. The before World War II, the hi hat was down low by your ankle. So, so that he's got a sock cymbal, and then he's got a ride cymbal, and that's it. And anything he can't do with those things, you know, he's gonna have luck. He's not the who was the guy from Rush that had like 30 drums?
Oh, yeah.
He's not that guy.
Right. That's okay.
He's the other guy.
Thank goodness. That kind of leads me to my next question is, geographically, you guys live pretty far apart. And I was curious how you guys, when you guys are on stage, you guys have a very obvious tightness and connection. And I was just curious, is it like riding a bike once you guys get back together and can pick up, or does it take, I guess, how do you make it work when you're not in the same town or able to rehearse on a regular basis?
Yeah, I suppose absence makes the heart grow fonder, at least partly. And then
he still brings you coffee.
The answer to that is probably that we are out enough, say 120 nights a year, something like that. So about, if you add it up, it's going to be about one out of every 3 days that we're on the road in the course of a year. We don't do it that way because it would be inefficient. But we are out enough, and we're playing, when we dial in a set, you know, we stick with it. So before the last record, my last album was called Salt as Wolves, and that came out in 2015.
That was the first one with Billy on it, too.
No, I've been... actually, the first one with Billy on it was a side project called Cold Satellite that came out in
08. Yep. Okay.
And then after that, we did a record in L.A. called Horse Latitudes. But this was the first record where, leading up to it, I had ceased traveling solo or traveling full band. It was always me and Billy, and that's been that way for, you know, 5 years or so. We still scale up to full band, but for the most part, we go out on the roads, the two of us, maybe 60, 70% of the time.
Okay.
And what that meant was we had a couple of years to dial in the songs that I was writing for that record. And one of the things that Billy taught me, among many things, is that if you want the freedom to play with real looseness and enough on the ball that you can improvise, you need to buy that freedom by working really hard at doing one thing. And because I was easily bored or distracted when I was a solo player, I might go out any given night and play a completely different set from the night before.
You got cool. You got an extensive catalog to pull from.
A lot of, and I know a lot of songs by other people, but what that meant was I never actually got the mastery of a given order of songs in a way that would give me the freedom where I could really basically get to another plane of playing, especially with another person. So that was a real opener for me. You know, every night I'd come back to Billy and be like, what do you think about changing the set tonight? We're going to put in this song. He'd be like, no. And I'd be like, all right, cool, yeah, no, we don't need to change it. And then that would happen about one out of every three nights because I just would get antsy. And then after about a year, all of a sudden, I was learning new ways to play inside of tunes that I thought I knew pretty well.
Oh, cool.
And that's when you just open up all this new territory that you didn't know was available to you.
Yeah. So you whittled it down then pretty.
Yeah, yeah. And we're trying to, you know, we have a new record that's coming out in June. And
cool,
we toured it.
That was one of my questions.
Yeah.
More on that to come.
We toured it in the fall as sort of a preview. My wife, Chris Delmhorst, had a record coming out, and we were her backing band, my band. And so her album came out. We played her record, and then we'd play about half of the songs on my new record and some other ones. And we were playing them pretty much the way we recorded them with a full band. Eric Haywood's a great pedal steel and electric guitar player. He's on the record, and my friend Jeremy Moses Curtis plays bass. And we haven't had the opportunity to go out duo and figure out how to play the songs and how different they are when we go out and it's just the two of us. And really, that changes things. When you don't have a bass player, your drummer plays differently.
Mm.
You anticipate the beat differently. And when nobody's there to take the solo, you have to figure out ways to use other tools, you know, maybe dynamic or texture or something like that. So we're out on the road. We were trying to write a set list this morning and figure out exactly which tunes we want to play from the old records and which ones from the new record.
Cool.
I think we're going to play the A side tonight and then double back around, play some old stuff, come back and play some stuff from the B side.
Cool. I'm excited to hear it for sure. So how did you get started playing? How did you get into music?
My dad brought me home a guitar when I was maybe 10. And he is not a patient person, and I am not as patient a person as I would like to be. And between us, there is a deficit of patience, and we didn't get very far with the guitar. He was a guitar player. He could play.
Okay. He was trying to give you lessons.
Yeah, he wanted to show me how to play. But, you know, I found him a little bit overbearing, and he found me probably a little bit mulish. So it just gathered dust, and he gave it away. And then, you know, he always had a guitar laying around. And I learned a few chords from him when I was maybe 12 or 13. Forgot them again. Never really got a fire underneath me. And then when I was 17, I was having kind of a hard time. And I was doing my homework. And I was listening to a bootleg recording of R.E.M. and Billy Bragg playing together live at a club called The Borderline in London.
Oh, cool.
And they were just screwing around, probably half in the bag, and they covered a John Prine song, and I really liked the song. And
you remember the tune?
Yeah, it was "Hello" in there from his first record, and they didn't play it like he did. It was all major chords and, you know, just kind of country strum type thing. And my dad heard it and he said, you know, that's a John Prine song. And I said, no, I didn't know who that was. And he brought me home John Prine's first record later that week, and for whatever reason, those Prine songs just hit me right in the soft spot, and I was ready to hear them. And it was really not something that anybody else. I lived in a small town, not unlike this town, mm-hmm. but in Wisconsin, and certainly none of my friends, with their new wave bands and funny haircuts, were gonna get into John Prine right at that moment. But he sounded a little bit like the way my dad played, you know, like sort of Travis style. Right-hand finger-picking stuff and country chords, and he sounded weird. And he wrote songs that were strangely accessible, but also lyrically kind of difficult in the sense that maybe, you know, he's fairly abstract. I mean, John Prine unites two strange things. Nobody else writes anything like him,
yeah.
And everybody knows what he's talking about, which...
That's a good way to put
hard,
it.
Hard to do.
Yeah.
So I picked up my dad's guitar, and I would wait almost until everybody was asleep, and I would play and try to figure out these John Prine songs.
I learned, this is your 17 years
old?
Yeah,
three, four chords and one minor chord, and I learned how to play. And then, you know, like 10 years later, I was playing at the Borderline in London.
Oh, wow.
Where I'd heard that bootleg. And that was a strange, you know, that was a strange that's juxtaposition. A
cool full circle thing right there. Well, and then you did a tribute
album. I did. I always forget because it's been out of print for a while, but I did make a record of, it's probably available online. It's called Shoot the Moon Right Between the Eyes, which is a line from
Promote that, man.
I know. And it's just a bunch of John Prine songs. I made it for my dad, and
Then
I ran out of money, and my label offered to print it and promote it a little bit. So we printed, I don't know, 5,000 copies and just moved those, and then, you know, it was over. I never toured it or anything like that.
You can hear it on Pandora.
I know that. Yeah, exactly. So, it shows up. I know people come up to me and say, hey, I heard your version of this song.
Yeah.
And actually, Prine put one of the version of Clocks and Spoons that's on there, he put on a Spotify list of his favorite John Prine covers or whatever.
Really?
Which means that somebody who works for John Prine did that, because John Prine is not on Spotify, I promise.
Well, I'll let you play another tune for us, if you don't mind.
You bet. This is the title track from the new album, which is called Blood Brothers, which seemed like an apt title, because oftentimes when you finish a record, you realize that all the songs that you thought were real different are pretty much about the same thing, or at least for me. And particularly in this case, I didn't have a lot of time. I booked a studio, and I wrote three-quarters or better of the songs in the 6 weeks between booking the studio and going to the studio. So that meant whatever was in my brain sort of ambiently at the time, that was what's going to pop up.
Lyrically or musically wrote?
Both. I mean, lyrically, what that means is there were pieces of things floating around in books all over the place, and then I united those with melodies and stuff like that. But let's see. This is actually a song that I wrote with Billy. We were in a hotel room in Kansas City a couple of years ago, and he was sitting there with my electric guitar, and he's playing this thing that went... I recorded him with my phone, and then I stole it.
Nice.
And I wrote a bunch of lyrics, and then in a bridge,
imitation is the best form of flattery.
Well, and I wrote it. I tried to write it. It's actually a song about Billy's life, and not about mine. So this is sort of Billy's song, sort of my song.
Thank you.
Sometimes I hold you in my dreams at night. I never told you I've never seen right. I'll meet you somewhere on the other side. If I saw you, would you know my name? If I saw you, would you know my name? If I saw you,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Title track from upcoming album, so I want to
Blood Brothers. It's going to come out in June. It's the same band from my last record plus Eric Haywood. So it's basically both versions of my longtime road band. Bo Ramsey playing electric guitar. People probably know Bo from Greg Brown Records and Lucinda Williams and Pieta Brown and other people. Iris Dement, I guess. And Bo and I have been working together. We made a first record together in 06, I guess. He produced a record for me down in Iowa. And
he's awesome.
He is such a beautiful guitar player and a beautiful human. Sometimes those things go together.
Yeah.
And Eric Haywood, who is a pedal steel player, which if people know Ray LaMontagne's records or the early Sunvolt records, he was the steel player in Sunvolt.
Oh, sweet. I don't think I knew that.
And he's in the Pretenders with Chrissy Hynde when they go on the road full band. And he's a beautiful musician and one of the great pedal steel players in the country. So when we're all together, man, it's a pretty heavy band, really beautiful. And again, Jeremy Moses Curtis, who has been playing bass with me since 08. And he's, when he's not with me, he goes out with other people. He has a band called the Curtis Mayflower, and he also goes out with Booker T., you know, who everybody knows.
Booker T and the MGs.
Booker T, yeah. Wrote Green Onions, right?
Yeah.
Among other things.
And then Billy will be with you as well.
Of course. Always Billy.
Yeah. God, that's a great...
Billy's the bedrock.
Great
It's
lineup.
So fun. I mean,
that's
know...
That's awesome.
When you can go out with your friends and if anybody has come up with a way to simultaneously make and spend $20,000, I don't know what it is. Go on the road for 2 weeks. Make your money, spend it all at once, and then go home broke. But it's really beautiful and fun. Yeah.
It's not a bad way to live.
Yeah.
When you're crafting your music, is it influenced by time of day, season of the year? That, is there an ebb and a flow to it, or is it pretty much you're punching the clock and 8 to 4:30, you're putting pen to paper, and you're picking your guitar and working on things? Or is it more of a... Is it influenced by anything in particular, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Both of those things are true in the sense that everything comes into it. Is it a full moon? Is it dead of winter? Is it the spring and, you know, everything's quickening and you get to be outside again and the birds, you know, start singing at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. All those things feed into it, but then, you know, the obverse of that is that you... won't write a song if you don't ever pick up a pen, right? So in order to write the song, or anything, if you're a writer, you have to have the discipline to show up on a regular basis and be there and be the person that's holding on to the pen so that when something good happens, which it occasionally does, you're there, right? You got your catcher's mitt on and you're ready. You have to be there when the bread comes fresh from the oven. That's, you know, it's the truth. If you don't put in the time, you won't get to where you have to get to. You know, when I was talking about how you have to play a certain amount and play the same thing over and over, and that can seem like drudgery, that sort of practice, if you want to call it practice. It still should be play, but it's, you know, you are doing a thing over and over again, and it is, to some extent, by rote. When you do that and you buy that sort of freedom, it's the same thing. As a writer, you have to write your way through. You can't write your way around. If you don't write anything for 5 years, at the end of those 5 years, you're going to be about where you were as a writer 5 years ago, because you have to write a bunch of stuff that is not good, and you have to write a bunch of stuff that you didn't want to write. You know, and then all of a sudden you push through and you get to this other stuff that, you know, and you know when you've been at it for a little while. You don't believe it when you're 20, but when you've been at it for a little while, you start to believe that all of the work that felt like it was nothing and felt like it went nowhere, every false lead, was really important, right?
Yeah.
So to me, that's a lesson that you get about, you know, in the second part of your life, maybe.
And it's hard work. It's hard work. Are there currently musicians out there right now that you draw inspiration from, or that when you hear their music or you see them perform, you're like, wow.
People who are on the road right now who I really like, I never get to see them particularly, but I buy their records and check their stuff out. So I don't know if you ever heard Sean Rao, but he's really good. He stayed at my house last week. He played down in Northampton, Mass., not far from where I live, and I went down, caught his first set, and then he came back to the house, and we stayed up till 2 talking about the music business and, you know, the process of making stuff and guitar signal chains and all kinds of weird stuff. He makes beautiful records, and I really love what he does. Eric Haywood, who plays pedal steel on my records, his partner Tift Merritt.
Is
a wonderful singer and writer, and also long page writer. She had a recurring series in the Oxford American this last year about traveling with their little daughter. It was really beautifully written, really thoughtful. Tift is a great performer. She actually does a duet with me on my new record.
Oh, cool.
And also Pieta Brown is on my new record, Greg Brown's daughter, who's married to Bo Ramsey. And Pieta, I buy all Pieta's records. I always check them out. And then, you know, younger people. A few years ago, I produced some records for younger people than me. I wanted a little practice in the studio, and I wanted a little practice working on a record when it wasn't my work that was happening, because there's different stuff that happens in your brain. You know, you would love to produce your own record, but you're not entirely available to do it, because you are also freaking out about whether you're good enough and stupid things. So when you go in and work on somebody else's thing as a producer, there's some stuff that's available to you that you don't have the rest of the time. Critical faculty. So I did a record with Caitlin Canty, who's from Vermont but has since relocated to Nashville. She has a new record coming out in March called Motel Bouquet that's beautiful. And then John Stotts, who's from Wisconsin, he lives over in Denver. He's a good songwriter. I produced a record for him a couple of years ago. Hayward Williams, who's from Milwaukee, made a record with Hayward. And, you know, I usually use players from my orbit to populate the band of these records. And and then you get to work on the craft side without having your ego be really involved in it at all, which, you know, that's great when you can do it that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for coming into the studio. I hope your pen always has ink in it here. And you keep on making new music.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me in.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
And this is a story song, in a way. It's about a very unsuccessful date that happened about 20 years ago. Driving down a county road, so in love with you. Landslide on the tape deck, a little warble coming through. 1996, you were 22. Getting married, that's the only thing I knew.
We shoveled horseshit for an hour to get you done by five. And then I took you out to supper at that little country dive. Just outside of Eldridge, with all the old farmers and their wives. Yeah, we got into a fight. You were smoking cigarettes. I walked 100 yards away, and I climbed up on a fence. You always asked me why I loved you, but no reason would suffice. And all the words that I could give you could never meet your price. Now I'm doing dishes with my little girl. Landslide comes on the radio, maybe nothing in this world could make time arc back this way and touch upon itself again. A little warble in my heart.